is basically our point guard, two guard, guarding their power forward, and he says, get that out of here. Brown with two stands down onto the Kumpo. 5 remaining. Tatum drives down.
Welcome back to another Celtics Pulse podcast. As usual, it's your boy Adam. I'm with Brendan, and I'm joined by KJ from Ike Books. How you doing, bro? You all good?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk about this series. It's been exciting to watch.
Brendan, how do you feel after last night?
I think KJ's more excited than I am.
Yeah, we were going crazy over here. It was a nail biter, but the third quarter, man, that was 40 points. In the third quarter, that was the difference.
That seems to be our problem every game at the moment, third quarter.
Can I just say Chris Middleton is the best three-point shooter I've ever seen in my life? Like, what is happening? Last year and this year, he just has something against the Celtics.
Yeah, Chris Middleton, I think he's one of the most underrated players in the NBA. The word has started to get out about him a little bit because Brad Stevens had an excellent quote a few days ago how he said Chris Middleton is one of the top 12 players in the East, and he thought that really started last year in the playoffs against the Celtics. And if you watch that series, Chris absolutely went off. Like, he kind of outperformed Giannis. He was certainly the most consistent buck in the playoffs. It wouldn't even have been a series without him. And he didn't really get much credit because his game isn't all that flashy. He's a very soft-spoken guy. He quietly went about his business in the offseason, continued to work, continued to get better, continued to really kind of stay off social media, and hit the ground running, had to make a few adjustments in Coach Bud's system because Chris Middleton kind of has that poor man's Kobe game where he's got all these spin-around, fade-away, jab-step jump moves, jump shot ability in the mid-range, and Coach Bud's system really emphasizes spreading the floor. So there's been a little bit of an adjustment period, and he had a little bit of inconsistency throughout the course of the season, but he was voted in as an all-star, and I think he was absolutely deserving. The man's always been great at shooting threes, but one aspect of his game that he doesn't get a lot of credit for is his defense and his overall basketball IQ. You know, he helps the team in so many different ways. Even if he gets a max contract this summer, I think his game will age very well, due to the fact that he does have all those skilled moves in the mid-range that he can go to get his shot off when he's, you know, triple covered. As we saw in game two when he did that little shake and bake pull-up three, that was pretty filthy. And, you know, it's looking like he will get a max deal, but his game is projected to age well over time. So that's just something that we can keep an eye on going forward. He's no doubt been a huge piece of the Bucks' success.
Yeah, I agree with the way his game will age just because he's not reliant on athleticism.
Giannis had a ridiculous amount more points in the paint this game. And one thing that I noticed rotation-wise from the Celtics is that they took minutes away from Baynes and gave it to Ogilvy instead. Do you think that or the way the Celtics were playing him was a reason he was able to get to the paint more, or was it just his mindset change?
Well, yeah, that was an interesting adjustment made by Brad Stevens. I don't believe that it really had any difference on Giannis' ability to get to the paint. He's one of the best paint scorers in NBA history. He's putting up Shaq-type numbers. So it really doesn't matter who's on him, who's not on him, what teams do. He's going to get his in the paint or he's going to get fouled. And if you think about Baynes, you know, he doesn't have as much lateral quickness if Giannis is roaming on the perimeter. So I think that was played a part in Stevens' decision. But at the end of the day, it's incredibly difficult to stop Giannis from getting in the paint and just doing his work with his elite Euro step, his long arms. There's times when he split defenders. And, you know, there's a lot of times where it looks like he's sealed off, but he just miraculously uses his length to get to the rim. And I don't think there's really been a team in the NBA who's able to come up with a solution. Game one, we saw the Celtics use a lot of forearms, definitely slowed Giannis down, but that was brought to attention after game one, whether it be in the media, whether it be on Twitter, whether it be Coach Bud on the sidelines, kind of going at the officials about getting those calls, and we've seen less of those forearms in game two. So it's really been Giannis just dominating the paint like he has the entire regular season.
Yeah, I feel like with Semi as well, one of the, like, on Twitter especially, and then amongst our group as well, when we first started this series, we were all calling for him to have more minutes due to the success he had last season against Giannis. I don't think it worked out that well. I mean, Baines played well in game one. Game two, he wasn't terrible. I would have liked to have seen him get some more, get some more minutes in the fourth. You know, we're already down, we're chasing. We should go back to a, you know, we play good when we've got Horford and Baines at the two big spots. So I felt like it was a good test. It didn't work. So we should have reverted and put Baines back into the lineup while we're at least trying to keep the score respectable.
Yeah. And to me, Giannis is just a different animal this year compared to last year. Like, it's just a completely different beast.
And I think a lot of that stems from Bud's system just spreading the floor. We have a lot more shooters than last year under the radar. If you look at our squad, we have George Hill. We didn't have George Hill last year. We have Brook Lopez, who's been pretty quiet in the playoffs. He's another floor spacer. Nikola Mirotic, he's been hitting a couple big shots every game, a couple threes with guys in his face. Pat Connaughton, absolute spark plug off the bench. He can knock him down as well. Ersan Ilyasova, he'll be able to drain a three. So the floor overall is just a lot more spread out for Giannis. And he is a different animal. He continues to work hard every offseason. The man, all he does is grind. All he does is try and get better. He's not out here trying to be buddy-buddy with guys. Like, I'm not sure what Kyrie and KD were doing in the tunnel. Maybe they're trying to just say hi to each other. Maybe they're trying to put out those stories, put out those feelers about teaming up and stuff like that. But Giannis kind of stays away from all the distractions, works on his game, and for the first time in his career has really had an exceptional coach to utilize his abilities and tailor the game plan to his strengths.
You talked about George Hill and Connaughton a little bit. I mean, those guys were phenomenal for you in game three. It was 21 points for Hill, 14 for Connaughton. That's 35 combined there. George Hill had an 8-0 run, I want to say it was, on his own during that third quarter. I mean, as the Celtics, and tell me if you agree with this, Adam, that just can't happen. Like, they played well, but George Hill, who's, you know, 33, can't just be blowing straight by Kyrie at the top of the perimeter and then getting a easy two-handed dunk. Like, it was the Bucks bench guys played well, but the Celtics can't be letting that happen.
No, we're not defending the way we should. We're not defending the way we're capable of. And it's frustrating because we're better than that. We showed in game one, especially the first half of game one, I felt, how we can collapse a defense, how we can really suffocate people when they drive in. And it's exactly what the Bucks are doing to us now. We're driving in deep in the paint and they're cutting off lanes. They're suffocating us. And we're just not playing with that same level of intensity at the moment. I don't know whether that game one win was actually bad for us.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. Quick question. So the Celtics, they obviously have respect for Giannis. They probably have respect for Chris Middleton after the way he went off in last year's playoffs. But do you think maybe the Celtics are kind of one of these proud franchises? They're used to winning. They came off, they're one game away from the NBA Finals last year. And they came off a sweep of the Pacers. In addition to blowing out the Bucks game one, do you think there's a lack of respect for the Bucks' other supporting cast? And maybe that has something to do with the lackadaisical defense?
We've seen the Celtics do this throughout this entire year. Like, it's like the Warriors, except honestly, they're just not as talented. That, you know, like, we see the Warriors occasionally just turn it off and not look engaged. And that's exactly what the Celtics do, but they don't have the same level of talent to make up for it. Like, usually, you know, you can give the ball to Kyrie. He can get you a bucket, kind of get you out of that. Or on the defensive end, I mean, Jaylen Brown's a great defender. Horford's a great defender. Usually Smart would be in there. You know, Morris is a decent defender, but they're not the same godly talents that the Warriors are, where they can get away with not putting in that same amount of effort. So I don't think it's anything Bucks related. I think it's more so the Celtics taking their foot off the gas pedal. And once things start to not go their way, they revert to these really bad habits of ISO heavy ball. that they can't all get away with. Like, Kyrie usually is the one that can. He's been terribly off this series. And actually, I have a question for you, KJ, about that. Do you think that it's been Kyrie off, or is it the Bucks scheme? Because it seemed like after game one, they started to do practically what the Celtics have been doing to Giannis.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different elements to answer your question, Brendan. Kyrie Irving, I respect his talent. I respect his handles. I respect his shooting ability. But I've never thought he's been a very cohesive player. When he was on the Cavaliers before LeBron James came, they were a losing team. And then LeBron came and changed everything. As we saw last year, the Celtics were able to get on just fine, get within one game in the finals without him. And he's certainly an offensive weapon. But going back to your point about the Bucks, you know, we have all these two-way players on our team. Like Kyrie, he's kind of this one-dimensional offensive weapon type guy. And like I mentioned, he's not always as cohesive, which I think plays a role in the Celtics' chemistry issues. And going even further than that, maybe their offensive lulls at times when the going gets tough, when they face adversity. But if you look at the Bucks up and down our roster, there's really not one player who can't play defense. Mirotić is maybe like the iffy guy, but every single player on our squad up and down the roster is not only, you know, an offensive player, but a defensive player as well. We have these long wings. We have these energetic athletes. And I think Kyrie, when the Celtics run plays, run screens to get him open and the Bucks are forced to switch, it's not like it's really as big of a mismatch as it might be versus another team where they have weak defenders up and down the roster. You look at guys like Pat Connaughton, Tony Snell, George Hill's a great defender, Ersan Ilyasova's a international player who's very skilled in moving his feet. Bledsoe's quick, even though he's been a little bit of a slump this series. Lopez is a very high IQ player. Chris Middleton's a strong wing defender. Giannis is probably defensive player of the year. So when Brad Stevens does execute these little, you know, screens or whatever they want to do to get Kyrie open and the Bucks are forced to switch, it's not as big of a mismatch as it normally would be going forward. And I think that's really playing a big part in keeping Kyrie contained, because he is dangerous.
And that's my biggest problem at the moment, because you've, like you say, you're playing well, you're keeping Kyrie contained. We should be utilizing the other players that are available, because the Celtics have got Hayward, who's playing the best basketball of the year so far for him. Yeah. We've got Tatum, we've got Brown, then you've got Mook coming off the bench. Rozier, for me, is just not the same player as last year. I feel like part of the time it's your turn, my turn, his turn. No, they're not playing together. They're playing, like Brendan said, it's very ISO, which makes it a lot easier for you guys to defend, because you just switch and you know that it's just going to be an ISO post up or fade away. It's not like it was in game one where it's team basketball, and that's where I'm getting frustrated. I don't know if you feel the same, Brendan.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of to touch on what KJ said a little bit, like, you guys do have great defenders, but to me, if we get Lopez or Mirotić, two guys in your starting lineup out on the perimeter, we should be able to at least take advantage of that, where we'll be able to get past them. Someone like Kyrie, Jason, Jalen could get past them and then cause rotations and get someone open. Like, I feel like Jaylen Brown has done a great job of that. He's probably been the best Celtics in this series, but like, there's opportunities is what I'm saying. You know, like, it's not like the Bucks are this unbeatable machine. We saw it happen in game one. I mean, won fairly convincingly. And obviously that was a little bit of an outlier for both sides, but the potential is there. Like Adam's saying, we just need to be moving the ball. Like, there's no ball movement, and maybe they are getting too caught up in, you know, after the Bucks started switching a lot after game one, that these guys feel like they can take these isolations. But that doesn't mean that you need to take advantage of the isolation by shooting. You can cause rotations and then just keep moving it and moving it. And I feel like that's what the Bucks do really well, like you said, KJ.
Yeah, and if you ask me, the biggest difference between this year's Celtics team and last year's Celtics team that almost did go to the finals is just one player, and that's Kyrie Irving. We all know Gordon Hayward is a player that lets the game flow through him. Like you referred to, Adam, he's playing the best basketball of his year. And he's never really had a reputation for a selfish player. And that kind of leads me into a question I just want to ask you guys. Kyrie Irving is a pending free agent. Now, obviously, you gave up a pretty big package to get him. But, I mean, as an outsider, I kind of see it plain as day. He's not good for the locker room. And your team has all this talent. It's not like the Celtics lack talent. Terry Rozier, he's a two-way player. He's got a ton of talent, as we saw in last year's playoff. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford is amazing. Gordon Hayward's very skilled. You know, you guys have a ton of pieces that have proven they can win. And, like, do you even want Kyrie back? Do you think he's a part of the winning formula?
See, now this is where I'd split opinion with people, because I'm of the belief that if Kyrie stays, then that's great. If he goes, I don't think it's the end of the world. I'm so big on these young guys, on Tatum and Brown, and I was big on Rozier coming into the year. I'm very cool on him now. He can go. But I do feel like I agree with you, KJ, in the sense that he is questionable within the locker room. And I do feel that because we've got Kyrie, we kind of defer to him whenever there's a tough situation. It's get the ball to Kyrie, and then it kind of sticks. Do you know? I know his passing numbers are up this year, so I'm not going to take that away from him. He's averaged a lot of double-doubles this year, so fair play. He's all of a sudden proved that he's got a very good passing game. But that doesn't mean that's his first option in his head. Brad's system's predicated on moving the ball, and that's why the Celtics were so successful last year. And the year before that, when there was still Isaiah. But now when the ball hits Kyrie's hands, there's going to be a driver and ISO before, unless he's locked off and closed down when the pass comes. So personally, if he leaves, I actually don't think it's going to be the end of the world for this team. What about you, Brendan?
Yeah, so I'm the same that I'm not like distraught if Kyrie walks. I think that we have enough pieces to stay on our feet fine. But I think that this team is better with Kyrie Irving. I don't think that they're necessarily utilizing him the right way every single time. Like you said, maybe the young guys do kind of feel like, you know, things are going wrong. We should get it to this championship proven guy. And, you know, he hasn't been the best leader, but that was a lot of the beginning of the year. I mean, he even came out and kind of bashed the younger guys a little bit, but I've seen him progressing. And that's kind of what gives me hope and why I wouldn't mind having him moving forward, because I think that this guy wants to be a leader of a team. He wants to do it the right way. And I don't think that he wants to be the leader because he wants all the spotlight. I think that he thinks that he is talented enough, and I would agree with that. And I think that, like Adam said, we've seen his highest assist numbers all year. He's averaging, what, 8-9 assists in the playoffs this year, which is something that he has not come close to before. So I really would like to have him around, but I just don't think that this team figured it out yet. Like, sometimes it just takes a little longer for things to mesh. Gordon Hayward came back late, and like you said, he's playing the best ball of his career, but that was really the Indiana series and then maybe, you know, the couple weeks, last weeks of the regular season. This Bucks series, he's been horrendous. Like, he has not been assertive in any sort of way. He plays the right way where he moves the ball, but listen, like, I understand you're coming off this crazy injury, but you're supposed to be the number two option on this team. And for our bench to only have 15, 16 points, 10 from Tatum, 5 from Ojale, like, that is not going to do it. So I don't think that this is necessarily on Kyrie.
Oh, no, not at all. I just think that the ball does stick sometimes. When we're down and we need some buckets, I get it. You go to Kyrie. KJ, I'm sure you'd agree. If you had Kyrie on your team and you didn't have Giannis, because obviously if you do, you go to Giannis. Yeah. But if you had Kyrie,
you need a go-to guy, right?
Yeah, you need him to get the bucket. My argument is there's other guys on that team that can go and get you a bucket. So distribute more. Don't just... There was a drive in the first quarter yesterday where Kyrie got the ball in the lane, took a screen, and then drove, and he finished the layup, but Giannis was probably like 2 milliseconds away from blocking that shot. And it was like, he didn't need to drive. There was still like 10 seconds left on the shot clock. There were shooters on both corners. It's times like that where I'm like, I get it. You can score, but make the smart pass. And that's what pisses me off.
Yeah. So I have a question really quick. I'll ask KJ first, and then I want to get Ab's opinion. What to you, KJ, from watching this, is the identity of the Celtics team?
They don't have an identity, and that's the biggest problem.
Exactly. That's exactly how I feel.
And I want to kick it back real quick, and then we can go on to Adam. But, Brendan, real quick, man, who is the leader in this Celtics team?
Al Horford, probably. I mean, Kyrie wants it to be him, and that's kind of – he's trying to take that. But I would probably say Al Horford.
And I'd agree with you 100%. I think Brad Stevens is a huge voice. I think the players have the utmost respect for him. I think Kyrie is a unique situation where the players respect his game. They respect his pedigree, but they don't respect his leadership. Al Horford, I think they do respect his leadership. So whatever that's worth, I just think it's very interesting. And it's certainly playing a part in the Celtics not having an identity. So, Adam, what do you think about that?
No, I agree. I think Al Horford's a very big voice in that locker room. Talking about leadership, I think we also miss Smart very, very much.
Yes. Actually, that's debatably the leader of the team.
Yeah, dude, he's like he's the emotional leader. He's our version of Draymond.
Yep.
Yeah.
All the way, I think we're a much more solid unit when he's on the floor. But Kyrie, personally for me, I don't think he's a leader. He could evolve into that over the next few years, maybe. But
I mean, he's only 26, you know?
Yeah.
There's time for him to grow into that leader. And that's why, like, I say that, you know, seeing him progress this year, because he was horrific at the beginning of this year. Like, I had high hopes. But for him to come out after – there was that Orlando game where Hayward didn't give the ball to him on the inbound. He was upset about it. There was a game later where he literally called out the young players publicly to the media, and I just don't see a point in that. But it got better, you know? So for me, the guy's 26. He had LeBron doing all the leadership the entire time. And I have faith that he can progress into that leader, but he's not right now.
And
yeah, I just
– Go ahead. I was just going to say, I don't think we need him to be that leader, and that's where part of the problem is.
See, I actually disagree with you there slightly. I think the Celtics lean on him as a leader, but they don't respect and treat him as a leader. Like, if the Bucks, Giannis is the de facto leader. He says all the right things, and he not only that, but he leads by example. And one of the biggest, most obvious examples came just 2 days ago when he was asked about the calls after game one, all the forums he was getting. And he said, you know what? I could complain to the refs. I do think about it, but I don't think that's going to help me or help my teammates. And, you know, I'd rather just hustle really hard. I think that means a lot more to my teammates. And that's called being a leader, just saying the right things. Like Kyrie, he can want to be the leader. He can, you know, his game is respectable, but his actions just don't cement him as a leader. Like you were saying, Brendan, like calling out the guys, leadership 101 is you don't insult people, you know, you don't throw them under the bus. And like, you know, being upset about an inbounds play, it's just like, man, what is this, middle school? You know, this is the NBA. Like, Gordon Hayward's an all-star in himself. Respect the man's decision. Like, you may hate on the way Hayward has, you know, come back after this injury. He hasn't really been this max player like you signed him to be. But at the very least, you can't hate on Gordon Hayward's basketball IQ. He's one of the smarter players out there. So it's just like, all this stuff is just petty and it's extra. And to be honest, I don't think you guys need it. I think it's costing you guys.
Brendan, what do you think if Kyrie... Okay, if Kyrie was to get injured early in the next game, are you worried for the remainder of the series? Or do you think we rally? Because for me, that's when we play our best basketball, when the Celtics have their backs up against the wall.
You know, that's actually a really good way to put it. You know, I hope Kyrie doesn't get injured.
Yeah, obviously, I never wish injury on anyone.
You know, yeah. I honestly think I wouldn't say that we necessarily get worse if Kyrie's not there. And that's crazy. That's a really good way to put it.
You know, it's exact like sorry to jump in, but it's exactly like Greg Monroe with the Bucks the last couple seasons, and I have one phrase that describes this: addition by subtraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it's crazy. There's only a certain few players it applies to, but you know, it's crazy that we're even having this debate. I mean, the Celtics, everyone looks at their roster on paper and is just, it's so talented. You guys have such a good coach. You guys have all these assets. You have a huge, great fan base. And it's just like, why isn't this working? You know, and I hate to say it because I respect his game, but all the signs point to Kyrie Irving. So it's just fascinating. It's, and as a Bucks fan, as someone who studies the Bucks extensively, I just couldn't be more comforted to know that we have Giannis as that leader. And I think it rubs off on the rest of our team. Everyone accepts their roles. Everyone plays for each other. They're not out there playing for free agency or their own stats. Everyone is very humble in the media. And it's showed. Like, the Bucks had the best record in the NBA. And not only did they have the best record, but they had the best advanced metrics. They passed the eye test. It's just chemistry means a lot more than people like to admit.
Yeah. And I asked about that identity, and I feel like that's huge in this. But the Celtics have always had an identity on what the Celtics are as an organization. They've always been this hard-playing, extremely defensive team that, you know, there's a 50-50 ball. Five guys are going to be on the floor in green chasing that ball. And honestly, I know me and Adam have felt like this. It hasn't been Celtics basketball this year.
We've discussed this at length.
Yeah. Like, Kyrie, I love the guy. He's not a Celtic. Like, if I had a definition of a Celtic, Kyrie does not fall under that at all.
Here's a question, Brendan. What point guard in the league right now, Marcus Smart excluded, would you class as a Celtic?
Well, like a potential clearly Celtic? I'm going with my guy that's my favorite player of all time is Rajon Rondo. But, I mean, Kyle Lowry fits that a little more, to be honest. I'm just kind of looking through names here. Who else? If you gave me Chris Paul is a little bit more of like a Celtic in a way. And, yeah, I mean, there's really not a crazy amount. Like, did you have anyone in mind when you thought of that? Like,
no, with me, I'm very big in the moment on if Kyrie's to leave, then we take our chances with Rozier because we know he performs when he's the starting point guard. Yeah. He's proved that time and time again when he's came in this year, all the way through last playoffs, and he's been bred within this system. He's got that chip on his shoulder a little bit. He's basically like, he's underrated and he knows it. So if Kyrie was to walk, we'd get that aggression inside of Rozier. KJ, who do you think would be a good addition to the Celtics for the point guard position if Kyrie was to leave?
You know, I think it doesn't really matter who it is because Brad Stevens is such a good coach. He's going to elevate that player. All that matters is they need to be able to be a two-way player. And like you just mentioned, Terry Rozier, we all saw what he did in the playoffs last year. And what did he do? He beat the Bucks. You know, he was the X factor. He beat Giannis. You know, granted, we had a Jason Kidd coaching staff, definitely a hindrance. But Terry Rozier was able to step up and let the game flow through him. I mean, you look at these guys on the Bucks. We got George Hill. You know, he's playing defense out there. Yeah. Just imagine if Malcolm Brogdon came back. You know, he's going to come back any game now. And Kyrie, like, it's so black and white to me. The man is elite offensively. He's making these crazy turnaround jumpers, but he doesn't play defense, and he doesn't care to play defense, and it's costing you guys. And it's, you know, as a Bucks fan, I'm loving it because I know that it's a mismatch every play. Kyrie wants to complain about the officials, another reflection of his leadership. It's just, it's almost comical. Like, he gets every benefit of the doubt, and at some point, he's got to look in the mirror and say, hey, maybe if I tried on defense, it would go a long way to helping my team. And one of the biggest parallels, kind of to revert back to that previous conversation we had about, you know, you need a go-to guy. You need like a guy to get you a bucket. Well, a lot of people look at James Harden as that guy, but guess what? The Bucks beat them twice as well. You know, that kind of basketball is not winning basketball. It's not going to win a team a championship. And I don't know if it's good for your team.
Okay. Well, to be fair, you know, the way we're talking right now is like this series is over. And
no, exactly. It's not really over.
Not, you know, I mean, and we've seen Celtics, we've seen Kyrie play defense this year. He's done a decent job at it. Obviously, he's undersized a little bit. He doesn't have the physical tools to be a great defender, but he can be an okay defender. But they're like, there's no reason, like I said, George Hill should be blowing past him. And then even it goes deeper than Kyrie. He had a wide open two-hand dunk at the rim. Like, that's just one play that sticks out to me. But there's plenty like that where it's just – and it, you're right. It does start with that leadership, but this isn't over.
No.
That if the Celtics keep moving the ball, if they have a little bit of fire underneath them and don't just revert back to these old habits when things start to go bad. The first half of the game yesterday looked fine for Boston. It looked good. And then it's a third quarter breakdown, and then – everything just goes terrible. They give up on everything. I mean, they deserve the crap that we're getting them, but this series is not over. You said Brogdon is back any game. Like, is it possible he's back game four?
You know, I don't think he's going to be back game four, even though there's been all sorts of footage circulating of him just raining threes in the Bucks practices. I do think he's going to come back in Milwaukee, though. It's possible he sits for the rest of the series, but if, you know, push comes to shove and we need him, I think he would be able to go. Kind of to play off your last point, though, Brennan, about the first half being fine, that leads me to an interesting topic, and that's something that no one else wants to talk about, and that's the depth of the Bucks, you know, coupled with the Celtics when they hit adversity. So the Celtics, they have a loaded roster, as I've said many times, extremely talented, extremely well coached. But if you go 1 through 10, they're just not as deep as the Bucks. So you may be able to hang for a half. But oftentimes throughout the year for the Bucks as well with our opponents, the games may have been close in the first half, but the third quarter when these players start to get a little fatigued, that's really when the Bucks have been able to pull away because we have not as much of a drop off when we go to our bench. And in keeping this about the Celtics, When the Celtics do get tired, when the Bucks do make a run, which NBA is a game of runs, it happens every game with both teams. What is a run against them? In the simplest terms, it's adversity. You know, it's like, how are you going to stop this run? How are you going to bounce back and make a run of your own? And the Celtics don't respond to adversity well. We could keep circling back around this lack of leadership thing, but it's a serious problem. You know, you got to play two halves. You got to play 48 minutes. That was one of the biggest flaws the Bucks had under Jason Kidd, is we would never play consistently 48 minutes, and we're a mediocre team because of it. I think the Celtics are underperforming, regardless of why that is. It's a fact. Like, they should be better than this. And like you said, Brendan, the series is not over. Anything could happen. You guys could tie it up after game four. The Bucks did reclaim home court advantage, but it's just really interesting to look at because those third quarter, you know, breakdowns, it's like, you know, it's partly just the Bucks' depth, I think, wearing down the Celtics. But then if you go a little deeper, it's combined with the fact that the Celtics don't really respond to adversity well. And the Bucks are kind of the exact opposite. You know, when we got blown off, like, the doors are blown off game one, you know, everything was just panic mode. Giannis was asked if they're going to make any adjustments. He said, absolutely not. And the Bucks responded to that adversity and won two in a row, including one in Boston after everyone was saying they couldn't win in Boston. So it's just like, beyond the talent, both these teams are supremely talented. The intangibles really matter a lot, and the series could go either way, but I think the Bucks have the edge when it comes to those intangibles.
And circling back to what you said about adversity, that is what the Celtics' identity should be, because that's what it has been over the last, especially over the Brad Stevens era up until this year. Part of me misses IT for that reason as well, because he would be the guy that, the shortest guy on the court, but the one with the biggest heart. He'd never let your head drop, man. I kind of regret not making a run for him coming off the bench this year.
Oh, man, that would have been great for you guys. And, like, going back to what we keep talking about, Isaiah Thomas, you know, 5'9", biggest heart in the court, that's leadership right there. You know, that's something that a guy will – his teammate next to him will be like, hey, I'm going to give my all for this guy. You know, he's doing it. Why can't I do it? And when the Bucks players see Giannis giving his heart every game, they just want to give his heart, give their hearts for him. And I totally didn't even realize that Isaiah Thomas was available, but he would have been fantastic pickup for you guys.
I mean, they're still next season, but I want to argue your bench point a little bit, because I do think that the Celtics have about the same level bench as Milwaukee. Like, I think that Rozier, Baines, Hayward, and if you have Smart healthy, are all potential starters in the NBA that you would have all coming off the bench. And then I'll give you after that, you know, Ogilvy, Tice, it does fall off. But to me, more so the issue is about the role that those guys are playing. I think that the fact that those guys are capable starters, minus Baines and probably Hayward also. So that kind of leaves Rozier there. But I think the talent is there. But it's the fit. Like, I don't think that you guys out-talent us depth-wise necessarily. But like you said, the intangibles of, like, Ilyasova is going to shoot threes and take charges. George Hill is going to be a distributor, hit shots when he needs to. And, like, they have their defined roles. Like, I can't go through this Celtics team and tell you what each of these guys' actual roles are. I can tell you what I think they should be, but from what I've seen, it is really hard to identify. And I don't think they necessarily fully know either. And that's an issue.
And just to push back just a little bit for a good conversation, I actually disagree with you. I may be biased being on the Bucks side of things, but if you look at the Celtics bench, you mentioned Marcus Smart. Well, what's the characteristic about Marcus Smart? He's all defense, no offense. You mentioned Aaron Baines. Like, he's not really offensive at all. He's more of a bruiser. He's not really skilled. Like, Semi Ojeleye, he's got one purpose. I tweeted it off Ike Bucks last night. He's out there to hack Giannis, you know? And if you look at the Bucks bench, go up and down the list of guys, every single one of these guys can shoot, and every single one of these guys can defend. So regardless of who you plug and play, our, you know, Coach Bud system, it's going to be cohesive. It's going to keep rolling. The train's going to keep rolling. And the Celtics, you know, you take out Kyrie Irving, you put in Marcus Smart, it's like, damn, you're losing a lot of offense there. You know, you take out Horford, you put in Aaron Baines, like, that's one of the steepest drop-offs there is. And you take out Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, you put in Semi Ojeleye, it's like, how can you honestly expect the same level of production? So I would disagree with you respectfully on the bench as being evenly matched. I just think those guys have traits about them that are the Celtics' way, kind of like you say. You know, they're the bench, if anything, plays Celtics basketball, but I just don't see the same amount of skill or talent on that bench. Like, Marcus Smart, all due respect, that guy gets by being a Draymond Green. That's not really, like, being that skilled or talented. That's kind of like, you know, fouling and talking trash and getting in people's heads, which is valuable. I'm not trying to say it's not valuable, but it's not really, like, legitimate. I mean, and you look at the Bucks, like, Pat Connaughton flying around the court, getting all these rebounds, going 4-for-9 from three, blocking shots, crashing the rim. You know, George Hill handling the ball, playing defense, dunking, knocking down threes. Ilyasova rebounding. He had 6 rebounds in 13 minutes, taking charges, getting a blocked shot, 1-for-1 from three, knocks down both of his free throws. I think the Bucks bench is an edge. I do.
You know, I'm gonna buck back a little here. Unintended pun right there. So for Smart, touching on him, because I'm going to fend the hell out of this man. So like you said, he's a great defender, but he's probably the best passer on the team also. I think that he is debatably the best playmaker on the Celtics. And his three-point shot has come around this year. Like, he's respectable, at least in that regard.
I think it's 35%.
Yeah, oh, that is respectable.
It's come around this year. And then Baines is one of the best, honestly, I feel like one of the best rim protectors that is in this league. Like, I'm not going to say top 5, top 10, but, like, he is a very good rim protector. He's not getting blocks, but his body is there every single time. And he has been able to space the floor a little bit now. I mean, it's like, you're going to let Bane shoot the threes. Don't get me wrong. When I see him shooting it, I'm not exactly ecstatic about it. But it's there. Like,
he's shooting 40% in the playoffs.
Yeah, but, which, you know, that's all right. I still don't want him throwing him up. Which I get where you're coming from, you know, because these guys have not been performing the way that they should be. And Rozier should be a huge piece off that bench. And he's been terrible all year. Like, it's there, you know, but they just don't – I don't know. The talent is there. They're capable on both ends for the most part, most of these guys. It's just – it doesn't come together. And I don't know the answer to this. How do you feel about – okay, so – who would you say is your number one guy off your bench?
In regards to the Bucks?
Yeah.
I would say now that we have him, Nikola Mirotic, he has been starting a couple games. But when we're at full strength with Brogdon, he usually comes off the bench.
Okay.
But going a little deeper, the Bucks don't exactly have a main sixth man, and that just plays to our depth. Again, you know, it plays to the strength of our bench, how deep we are. We don't necessarily have like this drop off. Like DJ Wilson, he's been kind of removed from rotation. He's a 3-and-D guy who also swats the occasional shot. Tony Snell's kind of been removed from the rotation as well. He's a 3-and-D guy who also swats the occasional shot. So it's like, even if we need to go deeper than we'd want to go, those guys have bona fide skill sets that translate into the modern NBA. And translate into Coach Bud's system and let the game continue to flow around him. And I'm just going to use that word very, you know, put a lot of emphasis on that flow. Kyrie Irving, as talented as he is, the game doesn't necessarily flow when he's in there. James Harden, as talented as he is, the game doesn't necessarily flow when he's in there. Like, obviously, they put up historic offensive numbers. I'm not going to say he's a, you know, I'm by no means am I saying he's a bad offensive player, but in terms of flow, why are the Warriors an elite team? Why are the Bucks the best record in the NBA this year? Because their offense is just free-flowing. It doesn't matter who's out there, starter or bench. Like, these teams play the game. They're flowing. They're running up and down the court, whether it's fast break, slams, getting the ball to the open guy because, you know, they're crashing the paint. It's just flow all around. And it's just really interesting to think about in that regard.
While we're talking about benches, and I'm just circling back because I've been waiting to jump in with this. Robert Williams, dude, I want Time Lord getting some minutes in the next game. Doesn't need to be an extended amount of minutes, but I want to see how his athleticism can slow down Giannis when Giannis is driving. He'd done it successfully against AD during the regular season. I just want to see how that affects the matchups a little bit, how it affects the defensive end, how Giannis adjusts, because Robert Williams is long, he's freakishly athletic, and he's got a ridiculously good knack for blocking shots.
To me, his defensive instincts aren't fully there yet. Like, okay, so I get where you're coming from. Like, to me, Robert Williams, I this sounds biased, but he really is what Mitchell Robinson is. But Mitchell Robinson is getting the opportunity and the minutes on what were they, the second, third worst team in the NBA in New York.
Yep.
So I really think that he has that talent. But to me, if he has to go against this, if he gets switched on the perimeter, he's absolutely screwed. And like Giannis going at him, like I think that might be 6 quick fouls. Like,
but it's in my, from what I'm, in the way I'm putting it, like, so defensive skill set wise, he's not going to match up. It's just from an athleticism, just to kind of wear him down during like the early in the third or just after he's come off the bench, just to take that little bit of steam out of him for when Horford comes back in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you guys, sorry, Brendan. Go. Okay. Well, I was just going to agree with your point that I think, like you said, Adam, he is very athletic, and that's a different element that, you know, what's his name?
Baines
doesn't really give you, but kind of like you were saying, Brendan, he doesn't like the Bucks play. If we played like this slow down half court offense, I think that would help him, but the Bucks are just flying out in transition and running, and we're switching, we're moving the ball, we're playing Spurs offense in terms of passing, and it might end up costing you guys a little more. However, it's worth a try. He does have the athleticism, probably more so than even Horford to stack up against Giannis. And I like the comparison you made to Mitchell Robinson, because I do see a lot of potential in Robert Williams. He is a rookie, though. Maybe it's worth a try.
Yeah, I'm only talking like a 5, maybe 6, 7 minutes in a game. Yeah. Just enough to just wear somebody down. Even if he does just catch a few fouls, it's not like we're catching fouls when he drives anyway.
Yeah.
So what's the difference?
KJ, you talked about how the Bucks are scoring a lot in transition. A lot of what I see from that, like I put together a clip of Kyrie's game 2 misses, and after nearly every miss, the Bucks are down scoring within like 5 seconds. And so like the Celtics usually are a really efficient team, especially Kyrie, and they don't turn the ball over that often. But this series, that's not been the case at all. And the Bucks are one of the teams that will punish you the most for that. So if the Celtics can just slow down a little bit, like not get caught up in all of this and just play, I want to say your game. I don't know what that is, like we talked about, but it's just you can't be turning it over and giving these bad looks that just instantly lead to transition buckets on the other side.
Yeah, and to kind of build off your point, I think it's important to consider that it's not like the Celtics are out here shooting themselves in the foot every other play. I think it's really important to consider that the Bucks are the number one defense in the NBA, so these turnovers are also a byproduct of the Bucks just, you know, playing elite level defense out there with, I don't care what anybody says, Giannis is better defender than Rudy Gobert. He's like a Superman LeBron James. All respect to Rudy Gobert, he's number two, but you know, no one in the NBA helps like Giannis, so he's just roaming around covering ground out of nowhere. And everyone always talks about how he can get to the rim with one or two steps, one or two dribbles. Well, he can also fly around and block a shot with the same amount of steps and dribbles. And that plays a part in the Bucks having the number one defense. We're very disciplined. So I think that's where the turnovers are coming from. I don't necessarily think the Celtics are playing sloppy per se. I do think the Bucks are just a great defensive team, and it's kind of forcing their hand a little bit more. And then leading into those fast break buckets, we're the number three offense in the NBA. So it's like, man, the Bucks are a really good team. And it's a hard fought series. Like we still have plenty of games to go, but man, we're a dangerous squad out there, and Celtics are going to have to really give 110% effort. And that means getting back in transition. And if they want to stop the Bucks, you know, what's really crazy is granted Washington, kind of the wheels fell off this year, but up until this year, the Bucks had always struggled against Washington Wizards not because we didn't have the talent to beat them, but mainly because they always sprinted back in transition, and they kind of limited our transition buckets because that's where our team, we're athletic, we're fast, we thrive in transition. And, you know, if Kyrie's kind of dogging it on the way back, like the Bucks will make the Celtics pay. And of course, no one's going to say anything to Kyrie because he's Kyrie. So it's kind of like you got this weird problem. Is it an effort thing? Who knows? But, we are deadly in transition. And in terms of these massive runs that were going on in the third quarter, like that plays a big part in those runs.
Yeah, to me, it definitely is an effort thing because I think the Celtics have the capability of getting back, and we see them do that fairly often. And I think that's part of, you know, like I said, that Jaylen Brown's been the best player in this series. We see him doing that often. Marcus Morris is doing that, and Horford is too. It's Kyrie and Tatum that look disengaged. They're the ones that are complaining about calls, that are taking some ISO heavy looks sometimes, and then throwing their hands up after they don't get a call or they miss, and just letting $5 run past them, and it's a disadvantage. So like somebody needs to snap them out of that. And I really do feel like the Celtics have the potential to win this series still. Like it's not over. It hurts. And like I said, I mean, this doesn't feel like a Celtics team. Being completely honest, I haven't even enjoyed this team the same way that I have previous years, and that sucks to say. But I mean, just looking at next game, game 4, what do you feel like needs to change, Adam?
you know, we need to close out quicker. We need to keep the ball moving more. We need to drive harder. And look, the cash ticket for the Celtics against Coach Bud's scheme is those 10-footers, dude. You can't drive too deep in the paint against this team. They're going to close you off. They're too long. They're, as KJ has alluded to multiple times, they're very good at switching. It's in that 10-foot jump shot range that we had success in game one. And I feel like we need to utilize our shooters around that sort of region of the court a lot more during game four. And hopefully if we can have Smart back, that's going to be a difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, we have very capable mid-range scorers. That was something that I read about a lot after that game one, that, you know, that's kind of the shots that the Bucks are willing to give up, because they're technically the worst shots in basketball, you know, like compared to everyone, especially the Bucks this year, shooting only threes in at the rim. But you got to take what the defense gives you, and the Celtics can hit those. But I mean, I feel like, KJ, you guys would probably live with us taking mid-ranges every time.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like you said, like Bud is willing to give up those shots. Luckily, we have some pretty good defenders, Chris Middleton, Giannis, of course, who are able to cover that really easily. And going back to what you were saying, Brendan, you know, as someone who supports the Bucks, I do still fear the Celtics. Like, I know how talented they are, and this series is not over. You know, the momentum has certainly shifted, but, you know, the Celtics could very well get another win, and we're right back locked up at 2-2. And then it's anybody's series. Even though we're going back to Milwaukee, you know, if you guys shoot in the mid-range, I don't think that's the answer either, for the only reason is because it just encourages more ISO ball. Like, you know, and say Kyrie does a spin around fadeaway in the mid range, it doesn't go in. Like, that's not a good possession. Say Tatum does the same thing, that's not a good possession either. And then you're like, what are you doing? You know, like, what are these guys doing out here? It's just really interesting if things don't get corrected for the Celtics, because from an outsider's perspective, you guys have potentially the best coach in the NBA, and he is in danger of being the scapegoat in this. I think it really depends. Are the Celtics going to go with Kyrie going forward, or are they going to go with Brad Stevens going forward? And if you guys were to let Brad Stevens go, if you were to fire him or, you know, buy him out or whatever, part ways, kind of like Dwayne Casey in Toronto last year, I think it would be a major mistake. So it's just really interesting. Like, there's a lot of, it's just not Celtics right now. And you got to wonder why that is. But we don't need to keep rehashing that. We've kind of spent enough time on that.
Yeah. And praying to every god that exists that Brad Stevens is there next year. I don't think that's a question, but like, that guy needs to be there. Like you said, debatably best coach in the NBA. I mean, not to hate on Popovich, anybody like that. Budenholzer's in there as well for me. He's the coach of the year this year. But yeah, I mean, Brad should be there. The Celtics just need to figure this out. Like, I mean, they haven't. This game one, I guess, was the closest thing. And, you know, credit to the Celtics in that, but the Bucks also played a bad game. So the Celtics have a lot that they need to figure out, but this isn't over. You know, you need the intensity is really what it is, and you need to be playing together as a team. But we've been running for a little while here. I think that we're going to look to wrap it up. Is there any last things that you want to get in here, KJ?
Yeah, I have one last question I want to ask you guys. Could you give me like a short response, you know, maybe take 30 seconds or maybe a minute, you know? I want to hit Brendan, and then I want to get to Adam as well. Could you describe the mood amongst Celtics Nation after game one? Or sorry, let's start going into the series, like the mood, like, okay, we just swept the Pacers, you know, bring on the Bucks. We seem to be clicking. Then the mood after the game one win, and then take us through, just for all our listeners out there, the mood from your perspective after game two, and then after game three as well. That's kind of really interesting.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the moods of respectable people, because there's a crazy Celtics fan base, like large fan base. So I'll give you it from the respected people, you know, because there's always going to be crazy people feeling whatever, overreacting to everything. But after the first series, I was feeling, and the vibe that I got, that everybody was clicking, that okay, the problem throughout the regular season was that people aren't moving the ball. There's too selfish of play. And then it seemed like, okay, playoffs are here. Nobody cares about that anymore. Everybody just wants to get the win. Like, this is exactly what needs to happen. Everything, this is the Celtics team that we hoped for. The starting lineup at the beginning of the year of Kyrie, Brown, Tatum, Horford, and Hayward couldn't get minutes all year, but we saw them closing games in the Indiana series because everybody was actually able to play together. So extremely hopeful coming out of this series. And then that was kind of proven in game one a little bit. It was the same type of thing, maybe not on the offensive end, but on the defensive end, it was like, man, we really have almost like the Giannis kryptonite, it seems like, in the way that we know how to play defense on this guy. But really, after that game one, myself was like, oh my God, I'm already terrified for Giannis game two because there's no way this happens again. And then sure enough, game two comes around, and part of it, I was like, you know, they shot absolutely amazingly on the Milwaukee side, but the Celtics didn't really play their ball. They checked out once that third quarter run happened, that 28-2 run. And I was worried, it was kind of upsetting, but I left, you know, happy we took one on the road. And then this one, it seems like everything is burning, like from the fan base. And even you could tell by how we talked about this podcast, we're talking about if we want Kyrie Irving back next year as if this is over. And like we said, it's not, but this looked terrible. I mean, the Celtics, I don't know what the identity is. And I it's difficult to find what the answers are. So I'm extremely concerned moving forward. How's your timeline a little bit there, Adam?
Game one. Like you say, after the season we've had with the ups and downs and not figuring it out, a lot of bad results against teams we expect to get results from, game one felt like it was a really big turning point. A lot of my Twitter timeline was saying similar things. Obviously, you ignore the guys that are like, yeah, that's it, we're the best. But like the guys that know what they're talking about, the people I actually enjoy reading their takes and stuff, everyone was in agreement that maybe we finally figured it out. We figured out how to play together, and now it's watch out, Golden State. Game two, I was very, do you know what? Personally, I was like, look, we're leaving Milwaukee. I put a tweet out about this as well. We're leaving Milwaukee with a 1-1 split. If you'd said that to me at the start of the playoffs, not the start of the series, but the start of the playoffs, I would have been more than happy to leave Milwaukee with a 1-1 split. Like, KJ, you guys know your team plays hard, man. And walking away even and taking it back home where we're notoriously hard to beat, I was fine with that. After last night's game, like Brendan said, like you've said, we're talking like this series is already over. It was a really good first half. Third quarter, again, we've had problems in the second and third quarters all year. It feels like we just can't figure out how to put together a solid 48 minutes of basketball. Now I'm hoping that we can figure it out for game four. And ideally, I mean, personally, I think this is going to go down to the wire at game seven, and then it's going to be a coin toss.
I was just going to get your prediction for game four, both of you guys.
I'm going Boston. Evens it up.
You know, if I'm taking all emotion out of it, I kind of think that Milwaukee takes it. And that hurts to say. Like, I really, really want the Celtics to take this, obviously, but I just don't know. I mean, they have to come out playing like this is a game seven, because you lose this, the series is done, like pretty much. I mean, there's chances, you know, 3-1 comeback, whatever, but my basketball mind taking emotions out of this, my fandom, I honestly think Milwaukee would probably be the team I'd put money on.
What about you, KJ?
You know, kind of like you said, Adam, I think it's a coin flip. I taking the emotions out of it, like Brendan said, looking at the numbers, Bucks, number one defense, number three offense, MVP, you know, deep squad, great coach, battle tested. However, all that considered, this is the Celtics season on the line. Like, this is game seven. And you mentioned the Celtics crowd. You mentioned the Garden, how you guys are great there. I think the stars could align and you guys could really, you know, put something together. And we've talked about it this entire podcast. Like, the Celtics have talent. They're loaded with talent. You know, you could potentially beat the Bucks. I think it's really a coin flip. Like, you know, the Bucks are clicking right now. They're feeling good. But at the same time, we're about to find out how much the Celtics really care. Because like Brendan said, if they lose this one, I think that might be all she wrote. You know, I'm actually going to go Bucks by less than 5-point victory. So I'm going to say Bucks winning a close one.
Very last thing. Can you give us the timeline from your point of view, KJ?
Yeah, so after the first series, we swept Detroit. Everyone kind of expected that. Even conservatively, if you didn't expect a sweep, because you're trying to keep expectations tempered here, because this is uncharted waters for the Bucks. It's been 18 years since we've gotten out of the first round. So myself, I thought Detroit might get a game. I thought they might, you know, the Bucks might win in five. Very probable that they would sweep, and they ended up sweeping, which is a great sign. I was actually very nervous because the Celtics swept the Pacers, a team that's known to play hard. They might not have the talent, but they play hard. You guys swept the Pacers. It appeared that everything was clicking. So I was a little nervous. I was hopeful because we had home court advantage. But then game one came and you guys smacked us in the mouth. To be honest, guys, I know you're going to hate this, but I've been preaching this for years now. The Celtics do play a physical brand of basketball, and it's Brad Stevens' genius. This is a compliment to him, but he coaches them in a way where they're able to get away with fouls per se. And where I'm going with this is all those forearm shots Giannis was taking. Brendan, you mentioned it earlier in the podcast. The Bucks had a bad game. We had an off shooting night. So if we're not able to get to the rim, you know, Giannis was getting forearmed every play. The rest of our team was getting forearmed every play. And they're not like forearms to the arms. These are like forearms to the body, which is why the refs didn't really see them. Thankfully, there was a lot of images circulating about those forearms. So I kind of had that in the back of my mind. I was like, okay, there's no way, you know, Coach Bud, being a good coach, lets this continue the whole series. It was an extreme shock to get blown out at home, a place that we'd only lost 5 or 6 times the entire year. But I you know, there was no way we could play any worse. You know, I didn't think that the forearm thing was going to continue, and it hasn't really continued as much in games 2 and 3, or at least the officials have kind of, you know, actually called them fouls. So we ended up winning game 2. We responded really well to adversity the entire year. There hasn't been a lot of adversity, but we did respond in game 2. So that was like, oh, heck yeah, let's see how we do in Boston. There was kind of that monkey on your back where the Bucks hadn't been able to win in Boston last year in the playoffs. I do believe we got a game in Boston this year during the regular season. I'd have to go double check that. So that was like another bit of hesitancy and being too overconfident. But after last night, like, that was just, you know, I think I'm feeling pretty confident. Like, I do think it's entirely possible that the Celtics get game 4. I think if there's any game the Celtics have a shot in to win, it is game 4. Like, this is your highest win probability. However, I just don't know if the squad is good enough or cohesive enough. Like, the squad probably is good enough, but I don't know if it's cohesive enough to stand up to the machine that the Bucks have going right now. Like, last night's game, Eric Bledsoe, he had a really, really, really bad game, and I don't know if that's going to continue. Malcolm Brogdon, like, he hasn't even been there. He'll probably come back soon. So the mood is very confident right now, but being someone who is very in tune to the NBA, I will not underestimate the Celtics, and the main reason for that is their talent. But even bigger is their coach. Like, Brad Stevens is a phenomenal coach. There are very few teams that are coached better than the Celtics. So I'm cautiously optimistic. It would not surprise me if we go 2-2, but I do believe the Bucks will win in a close one.
Well, that is going to do it for the episode. be sure to follow the Celtics Pulse Twitter at Celtics_Pulse. Give Ike Bucks a follow as well. I don't want to get your handle wrong. Do you want to go ahead with that one, KJ?
Yeah, it's Ike_Bucks. And I also just want to take a second to tell everyone to follow and check out Welcome to Ike on Twitter. Welcome to Ike. And we're releasing a lot of music from the brand on there right now. So if you guys are interested in some good music, give that a look. Posting a lot of great stuff on there as well. I just want to thank Brendan and Adam for having me on. Always great to talk basketball. This has been a hell of a series so far. I have no doubt it's going to be insane the rest of the way. And looking forward to talking again soon.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, bro. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
That is going to do it for this episode of the Celtics Pulse Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. We will be back after Game 4, hopefully a little more optimistic after a Celtics W.